Good morning. This is your operator for this call. On behalf of MaxEyes Fairfield, I would like to welcome you to this conference call on October 14th, 2019, related to the press release published earlier today covering the financial and operational update. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. With me today, I have Carol Hoikos, Chief Executive Officer of MaxEyes Fairfield, and Mark Ivan, Chief Financial Officer. After a brief introduction, there will be a Q&A session. To ask a question, you can press star 1 on your phones. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Carol Hoikos, CEO of MaxEyes Fairfield. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon and good morning, and thank you for joining us today. My name is Carol Hoikos. I came on board as the new CEO on October 1st. I joined this company because I'm confident that our technology, our people, and our asset-light model can generate substantial value for our customers, partners, and shareholders. That said, we first of all need to take care of our business today. As you and I know, we have lowered our revenue and EBITDA estimates for the full year significantly. Mark will get back to the main drivers behind this development before we open up for questions. We will not have all the answers for you today, but we will try to be as open, transparent, and precise as we can. Before Mark takes over, I would like to say that our job as the new management is very clear. First, we need to ensure that we fully align the MaxEyes and Fairfield organizations and systems and capture the integration synergies that was part of the rationale behind the combination of the two companies. Second, we need to ensure that we capture our share of the many opportunities we see coming to the market for 2020 and beyond. Third, and equally important, we need to lower the company cost base to restore and improve profitability and the long-term margin outlook. With that, I hand it over to Mark. Mark?
Thank you, Carol. And good afternoon, Europe, and good morning, America. As highlighted, we will be as transparent, as precise as possible today. But as Carol alluded to, we will not have all the answers for you, given new management on board. But what I can say as the new CFO is that I look forward to get to know you all better as we move forward. I have met several of the investors and analysts already. Analysts, and I regret this starting point for you all right now. As announced this morning, we lowered our revenue estimate for the full year from $500 million US dollars to a guidance of $455 to $465 million, and then a full year EBITDA estimate from $100 million to $45 to $55 million range. The main driver behind this revenue expectation is the delay of a number of projects into 2020. Some of these are very high margin projects. And this risk factor was highlighted during the Q2 report that was delivered in August. The delay of the projects with high margins into 2020 furthermore reduces our EBITDA expectations for the full year, as you have, of course, noted. In addition, and as we highlighted in the press release, the EBITDA expectation might, in addition, be reduced to current projects with lower margins, as I've alluded to. We haven't anticipated some higher SG&A, partly explained by delayed synergies and non-capitalized expenses that have hit the P&L. And in general, just an excessive cost level, in my view, and I think in Carol's view as well, with the activity level and capitalization utilization based on our operations going forward. In addition to that, we will have some non-cash elements, including the final purchase price allocation. We are looking into getting our fixed asset registered fully in place. And we are looking into reorganization with new management that is expected to have some restructuring costs going forward. So I know you have many questions, and I'll hand back to the operator for him to open up for the Q&A session.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We have a question from John Olson, ABG.
Yeah, good afternoon. I wonder if you could add a little bit more comment on 2019, because you have this big node sale that has a very high profitability in 2019, and according to my estimates, it seems like the EBITDA from this node sale should be in the 40 to 50 million US dollar range. In other words, it seems like your margin on average for all the other projects are close to zero on the EBITDA level. Is that a fair assumption?
So let me start, and then I'll hand it to Mark. So thank you for your question. So yes, clearly we have a big impact of the equipment sale in 2019, but it also precisely highlights the challenge that Mark and I have identified, in that the overall cost base for the organization, for the company, is simply too high for the activity that we currently have and the outlook that we have. And that has a very negative impact on the overall margins for the other activity that we have. So when you split it by the different segments that we work in, we see that we are, as you highlighted, very profitable on the equipment sales. We are equally profitable when it comes to reservoir monitoring, but it's on the acquisition side where, again, the overall burden of the size of the organization is weighing too heavy on the margins on equipment, or on acquisition, sorry. So that is exactly what we're planning to address. You may have read up on my history of employment. I have been through situations like this before. I know exactly what needs to be done with regards to the right sizing of the organization to bring it in line with the current and future activity outlook. And Mark and I will aggressively pursue that. Mark, you want to add any further comments?
Yeah, thanks, Carol. I think you've covered the basis. Maybe I can just add that on your numbers, Jon, the outlook for that I see right now, you're a little high on the margin for the equipment sale, meaning that the margins on the remaining business are a little higher than you alluded to. But yeah, of course, your point really stands, and I think Carol answered that question.
Okay. My second question is regarding the covenants. You write that you are in compliance with all loan covenants for 2019. But if I remember correctly, the equity covenant was lowered from 60 to 50%. But does that lowering from 60 to 50 only account for... Does that only apply for 2019, i.e. it's back to 60% from Q1 2020 again?
Yes, that's correct. So, of course, we are, as I've alluded to, and we were deliberate in kind of highlighting the green lights on all three covenants, the leverage covenant, the minimum liquidity covenant, and also the equity ratio covenant for this year. We are above, at the end of the year, we are above even the new level going into Q1, the way it looks right now. But as you know, it's still early days for us. We're still working on establishing a firm ground to stand on as new management. So for 2019, it still looks okay.
But that sounds a bit weird, actually, doesn't it? Because as of Q2, your equity ratio was 58%. And surely in the second half, if you're going to reach your guidance, it will basically be an EBITDA, flat EBITDA, and we have depreciation, and there might also be, a cost charge as well, which will have a negative effect on the equity, value of the equity. So it does seem a bit weird that your equity ratio will go up from here, which is required to reach 60%.
Yeah, no, I understand your analysis. I'm simply just stating that right now on the outlook that I have based on the numbers I'm looking at right now, and with the caveat that we need to dive deeper into this to understand, but based on the work that we have done, it will go up slightly. So at the end of the year, we will be slightly higher than the 58 for Q2.
Is there something else I missed? Because your EBITDA would be... Because clearly your EBITDA, just given your guidance, will be very limited for the second half, 4 to 14 million US dollars to be exact. And you had an amortization chart of 18 in Q1 and 14 in Q2, so it seems like logical you have a negative EBIT for the second half, i.e. and that's before restructuring charges, so the... You must have a negative net income, and i.e. a negative effect on the book equity, or something I'm missing.
Yeah, no, I agree with your logic, but there are some changes in the balance sheet here. We have EBITDA yesterday, Q2 or 42. We indicated a range for you going forward. Let me just get back to the calculations once we have firmer ground on that. But I don't disagree with your logic. So my statement is based on the numbers that I have right now, and I'm going to continue working on the outlook that we've given you. We wanted to be sure to get this message out to you as soon as we saw it as new management. But there's more work to be done to make sure that we have stacked up the whole set of numbers here, and dotted the I's and crossed the T's to be sure. We're not
all right
now. So with that, Kat, I don't disagree with your logic.
Okay. My final question, if I may, to you, Carol. The whole ocean bottom seismic industry seems to be struggling with the operation, seems to be cost overruns, delays, etc. We've seen it from Seabed, we've seen it from Axis Geophysical, we've seen it from you guys. What do you think is the problem with the ocean bottom seismic industry in general?
So I think we really, at least I can only comment for Magseis Fairfield, but the way I approach our business is really to look at the project from start to finish. And this starts right from when we start bidding on work until we fully execute the work. And I think historically, and what I've seen in the seismic industry where I worked before, I've seen that we make two overly optimistic assumptions during the bidding phase and then deal with the consequences in operations. So it's clear to me that we need to face this head on and make sure that we indeed do proper risk assessments, proper project management, right from day one when we receive the tenders until we fully execute the work. Now, fundamental to this, and you will hear me say this a couple of times during this call, but I can't stress enough the importance of this. We fundamentally need to change the cost base at which we work. And we, as Magseis Fairfield, have a key technology differentiator that will drive the efficiency and therefore lower the overall cost per square kilometer. And we will share part of that with our customers, but also take our fair share in overall EBITDA to the P&L going forward. That, for me, is the key to our success, leveraging our technology, lowering overall cost per square kilometer, and lower the cost burden of the organization on the P&L. Those are key drivers for me, and you will continue to hear me talk about that in communications going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Just a reminder to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Morten Nystrøm, Arctic.
Hey, good morning. This is Morten from Arctic. First, a question on the timeline for the cost cuts here. When should we expect you guys to come out with, let's say, a dollar figure on the cost targets, and when should we expect to see effects?
So the The cuts will happen very shortly. Obviously, this will be spread over time. We can't do them all in one go. At the same time, we obviously need to comply with the laws of the land where we work. So there may be a delay because of that. But my commitment is that I will provide a further update during our Q3 call and show you that the first actions have been taken and give you an update on the subsequent actions that will be executed during the remainder of Q4 and during Q1.
Thank you. Second question. There has been a lot of talks the last, let's say, 6-9 months about this opportunity pipeline for new work. However, if you look at your awards for Magseis, that's been quite poor. Do you see any change in this picture? Has the opportunity pipeline changed? Contracts just pushed to the right, or has they disappeared? If you could elaborate a little bit around that, that would be good. Thank you.
Yep. So in particular, let me start by addressing Q4. So we've seen a mix where some projects have indeed been delayed and pushed to the right, as you said. And as Mark alluded to, these were high-margin projects. In addition, there was a project in Southeast Asia that we have penciled in for us to do the full acquisition of. That was turned into an equipment rental project for us, and therefore reducing the total revenue stream and therefore EBITDA revenue stream significantly. So that is the impact you see there. Well, when I can speak about 2020, we continue to see a very healthy pipeline of opportunities, in particular in the deep water, and in particular in our core regions of operations, which is the Gulf of Mexico. We're also starting to see a similar uptick in tender activity in the deep water in Brazil. And as usual, if you want, we see the seasonal uptick in activity in the North Sea, where we will both have acquisition activity and reservoir monitoring activity in 2020.
Thank you. And just a final question. Over the last week, I know you guys haven't been on board for many weeks, but I guess you have some thoughts around it, and that relates to the margin question. The prior management has been, you know, pretty clear around margins, what margins are acceptable, what is not, etc. If you could share some thoughts around margin level and let's say a minimum level, because if you look at what you're delivering in 2019, you will have largely an overall margin of 10%. And what should, you know, we and investors think about 2020 and beyond there in this industry?
So let me,
thank you.
Sure. So let me start with that. So clearly the margins for 2019 are too low in my book, and clearly need to be improved materially in 2020. There are several, again, actions we need to take to achieve that. It is to lower our cost base for the organization and to leverage the technology that we have to reduce the overall cost per square kilometer and to take our fair share of that value. I cannot at this point give you a guidance on margins for 2020, but as we continue to have as open a communication with you as we can over the coming weeks during the Q3 call and then also during the Q4 call, we will continue to provide additional updates for you. Mark, any other things to add?
No, I think that that nails the point of our ambition to get a better cohesiveness between expected revenues and signed contracts and the cost base associated with that, and not ramp up the business for an expectation of contracts that we're not sure will be there.
Our next question comes from John Olsen, ABG.
Yeah, a couple of quick more questions, if I may. You gave given guidance for the year, but may I ask, is it possible to give a little bit more indication about Q3 versus Q4, please?
Mark, you want to...
Thanks, John. I think at this point, I'm most comfortable in giving the full year guidance. And right now, the systems and processes that I see in Magseis, having been here a few weeks now, is that we haven't closed the books for Q3 yet. That will be done in a couple of days. We'll get definitely an early figure. So most of the work here based on this financial update today is based on work on full year expectations. So, but what will be certain is that the consensus for Q3, of course, needless to say, will come down considerably. So I think that's that's where we can go right now, and then we'll be sure to give you updates before we can do one on one, John, but also when we get back to the 19th of November Q3 presentation.
Yeah. And the remaining chunk of nodes in the big node sale, that would come in Q3, won't it, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, that's my understanding, yes. That's correct.
Mm. Second question, the $50 million in debt you have to DNB, what could you remind us, please? What's the maturity date of that, please?
We are paying off $8 million per every half year. There are six installments total on that debt, and it started at 50, and we are right now at 42. So the end maturity date... it's 2021, the way I see it right now.
All right. And then on the CapEx guidance for the year, does that still stand with $15 million in maintenance and $15 million so-called growth CapEx?
I would be tempted to say no right now, but that doesn't... I'll need to look more exactly on... on what the total looks like, but my reaction to the commentary that was given on the Q2 call was that that we weren't entirely clear on the remaining CapEx items. So I know it was commented on the growth CapEx and on the sustainable CapEx. The levels will change a little bit, but right now I want to just... let's say reserve the right until we stand on firm ground on what the total CapEx will be. There will be some deviation, but not large. So a small deviation based on the number that was given.
And maybe to add to this, so clearly we are reviewing every single CapEx line as we provide these updates. And again, Mark alluded to this already, but we are very much changing the way we look at this. Rather than spending CapEx and building capacity based on a hope and an anticipation, we want to be on much more solid ground that is directly linked to tangible activity and a revenue stream. So you will see more rigor and control with regards to the overall CapEx spend going forward in line with the overall activity level that we see.
All right. And all these operational issues that you're seeing, how much of this will be also be extended into 2020? Is it possible to say something about the backlog you have for 2020 and whether that's going to be the same issues as you have at the moment, please?
So I think the primary activity will come from Deepwater Gulf of Mexico on the ZX4 cruise. That's a well-oiled machine, and we know how to execute those projects. So I'm not anticipating any major hiccups there. We intend to restart a Z700 crew during the North Sea season. But again, this will be based on using existing vessels with an existing node inventory. So there should be no reason to assume that there will be hiccups with that, and there should be flawless startups on those, and that's certainly my expectation.
Okay. And then regarding the backlog for next year, as the Nystrom mentioned, you have had very few contracts last 6 months. Is it? I know it's early, and you both are new in your jobs, but is there any chance that your top line will go up next year, or will it be a bit sharply down? Can you give some indication of that, maybe? And also, what your backlog now of unannounced contracts that you're likely to sign over the next between now and Christmas? Is it like, should we expect a lot of contracts over the next couple of months, or should we expect very few?
So there's a number of contracts that are being finalized that are either in the LOA phase or in the phase of contracts being finalized. So certainly my expectation is that will be closed out and converted into secure backlog during Q4. That is clear. Could you repeat the start of your first of the question?
Yeah, the first part of the question was whether it's likely that you will see top line growth next year or not, lower or higher or lower revenues next year, basically.
Exactly. So so first of all, I think we need to exclude one-off equipment sales from the picture, right? So in my commentary now, I will exclude the BGP sale. Because we're currently not forecasting a repeat of that in 2020. But we are seeing a significant increase in our overall deep water activity in a first view at 2020. And again, this is driven by the deep water plays that I referred to earlier. And a healthy activity in the North Sea. So in fact, when you look at the pure acquisition business, I anticipate to see growth in 2020. But again, it's give us a little bit more time so that we can provide you with proper guidance during the upcoming discussions and the Q3 and Q4 conferences. So that we can provide additional color to these comments. Yeah?
And the contracts that you're about to sign, is it too early for you, Carol, to like put your new footprint and stamp on these contracts, i.e. securing high profitability, which I guess basically means that you need to have higher prices? So question is really, have you had time to really influence these new tenders and new bids that you're doing? And are you pushing prices higher to make sure you take enough height that there could be some operational issues, which seem to be an industry problem?
Yeah, so during the last 2 weeks, I've not been able to change pricing on existing or new bids or contracts. What my contribution will be is that those bids had a certain assumption with regards to SG&A and overall cost base for the company. And I'm intending to reduce that materially going forward. So that will, by default, have a positive impact on overall profitability. And obviously, going forward, as the new tenders come out, we will address overall pricing levels. And I think this is an industry-wide message, if you want, that overall pricing needs to go up, as far as I'm concerned, and we will certainly, as Magseis Fairfield, do our part in that.
And do you think the oil companies are willing to pay more for ocean bottom seismic? Because one of the issues with ocean bottom seismic in the past has been that it's been so much more expensive than conventional seismic that it has limited the growth of ocean bottom seismic versus conventional. Are you now able to increase prices significantly, you think?
Well, so it will be a combination of pricing, but also to monetize the technology that we have and the efficiency that results in, right? So I think that's the combination of the two will be evident during 2020.
Hmm. All right, thank you, and good luck and welcome in the job, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Morten Nystrøm, Arctic.
Yes, it's Morten from Arctic again. Just a follow-up question. Just a question on the 219 EBITDA target here of roughly $50 million. What is the is it any restructuring cost included in those $50 million? Meaning that, you know, what I'm trying to get is what is the underlying, let's say, run rate EBITDA in the second half and also in 2019. Thank you.
Mark, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, no, thanks, Morten. Right now, I think it's going to be kind of around this answer to your question. We are looking into restructuring costs that, or if, let me say, there has been some restructuring already, just the facts of new management coming in. That, of course, will be included. Some of that will be included in Q3 numbers. And with the cost cuts to align our cost base on both cost of sales and on SG&A to the revenue expectation that we have, we will, of course, have additional restructuring costs. So in Q4, that is. So I'm hoping to get all of that done on this side of the year so that we, and right now we have started that work. That Carol alluded to earlier in the call. So I'm hoping to get the run rate cost base, you know, where we want it from early January. To your question, I guess that's the best I can do right now. The company has not reported a concept of adjusted EBITDA to be clear on what the one-offs are, what the reclassifications are, what the IFRS 15 issues are, what the IFRS 16 issues are. And my aim for Q3 is to have all of that outlined for you so that you can understand the underlying EBITDA run rate of the business going forward. So I think that's the best we can do right now.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Tommy Jonasson, Spark Bank Markets.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was just wondering about your comments regarding aligning the interests of Fairfield and Magseis. Does this imply that you will go for prioritize the Fairfield legacy nodes or the Magseis legacy nodes, or will you continue to use the technologies of both companies going forward?
So we will continue to use both technologies going forward. They both address a particular market and also client need. So you will continue to see both the Z technology and our MAS technology in the market going forward. Having said that, we are continuing to invest in the engineering and manufacturing over time of the new MAS 3 node. That's where we expect to see the most significant uptick in the adoption of that technology. And it will also provide the biggest payback to us with regards to the capabilities of the node and the battery life and therefore the efficiency that technology will bring to us, which obviously then translates into the value creation for ourselves and our shareholders.
Great, thank you.
We have no further questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, let's pause for a moment and see if there's any final questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. There are no questions in the queue.
Okay, let me just take the opportunity to just give some thought to the last question from Morten Nystrøm at Arctic. I think I was a little bit careful not sticking my head out on putting numbers to your question there, Morten. But we have done kind of an early calc, and if we can say that this is a very preliminary number, but the one-offs that we're kind of seeing that will kind of be adjusted out of an adjusted EBITDA number pertaining to synergies that were planned that are not materialized, some non-capitalized expenses that are hitting the P&L, etc. It's in the neighborhood of $10 million. But please have me excused that number could change when we come to the 19th of November.
Okay. If there are no further questions, I wanted to thank you all for joining the call. And again, reiterate my message that I've been through a restructuring and realignment of a company like Magseis Fairfield before. So I will bring that experience and know how to do this to the table. Mark and I will work very closely together to deliver on the synergies and the cost reductions that we need to turn this into a profitable company going forward. What you can expect from us is open, transparent communication to you on the during the events that are scheduled for the remainder of this year and next year. And we look forward to having those discussions with you. Mark, you want any final comments?
Yeah, I fully agree, Carol. And of course, we fully understand that credibility and trustworthiness needs to be rebuilt in the company, out in the marketplace. So we understand that transparency is needed. Hopefully it's appreciated that even though it is early days and we don't have all the answers for you, that we were early out in giving this operational update or profit warning when we saw it. So please reach out if anyone has any concerns or questions that they would rather do one-on-one. I think I can say I'm available 24/7.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.